Cruella de Vil, Cruella de Vil. If she doesn't scare you, no evil thing will.
Oh,
to
Roger.
See her is to take a sudden chill. Cruella, Cruella, she's like a spider waiting for the kill.
Roger, look, she'll
out,
hear you.
Cruella de Vil.
It's Friday, August 9th, and this is Two Guys Without a Clue. I'm Catatonic Cat, here with Dragaroo. How are you doing, Dragaroo?
Terrible. How's it going, man?
Terrible. What's wrong tonight?
Oh, nothing, actually.
Oh,
I'm fine.
You're fine?
I just wanted to mix things up a bit.
Oh, okay. I guess
we're completely off the rails now.
you screwed me over. Oh, man. Usually you say good, and then we're like, oh, great. And then we're like, you threw me off.
Well, mission accomplished.
Damn it. Oh, man. Well.
I'm doing good. Yeah? Thanks, Catatonic Cat.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll get back into the groove of things. So if you had not guessed, we watched 101 Dalmatians, something we talked about last week.
Something we've been threatening to do for a little bit.
We've been threatening to do for 16 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
and we finally got to it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Coincidentally, happens to be the 17th movie.
Yeah.
In the Walt Disney Animated Classic series.
And can you believe it? We've entered the 60s. 1961.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Speaking of wild, that opening sequence for this movie?
Yeah, it has a surprisingly elaborate credit sequence. It's really long.
It's a really long opening credit sequence. Mm-hmm. What I said was that it reminded me of something like Bewitched.
Totally.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think that was a thing of the 1960s?
I suppose so. But yeah, the style of the credits... definitely where elements were popping in, and there was all, it was kind of like abstract, you know. They were using the Dalmatian spots, so they're integrating the visual imagery of the film itself, obviously. But yeah, it totally was reminiscent of that kind of lighthearted television opening that you would expect from that era.
Yeah, I mean, Bewitched started in 1964. So
there you go.
Maybe Disney started it with this.
maybe. But in either case, it was absolutely the style. It was what was in vogue at the time.
It was in vogue. Exactly. Man, that opening sequence was crazy. You gotta see it. It's mind-blowing. I hadn't seen this movie in quite a long time, I think. I don't really see it on TV or anything.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, all I remember, I think, is from when I was a kid, was the Disney Saturday one Saturday morning cartoons. Where they had the 101 Dalmatians, and they had, I don't know, three plus a goose or something that they were showing on the farm.
Was it a TV series?
Yeah, it was a TV series. I don't know, like 1997 or something.
Yeah, that seems to ring a bell. Starring the puppies themselves, right?
Yeah, it was just the puppies. Yeah.
I'm seeing lots of spots, plenty of polka dots.
Get those puppies!
Can't catch a furry flurry, running in a blurry hurry.
Get those puppies!
I think they came out shortly after the 1996 live-action movie.
Uh-huh.
I think they brought it back. Yeah, the series, rated from 1997 to 1998, so I guess a season.
Okay.
They had a couple sequels, did you know that?
No.
Oh, my. Yeah, so they had the Escape from DeVille Manor in 1997. It was, that's a video game. But they had 101 Dalmatians 2 Patch's London Adventure. A 2003 direct-to-video sequel about Patch.
Oh, okay.
One with a Dalmatian puppy with a black spot over its eye.
Right.
And then there was a 2009 stage musical.
Really?
Yep.
That would be...
I don't know how that would turn up.
Yeah. I wonder, is that based on the Disney play?
Yeah, it was sponsored by Purina Dog Chow.
Oh, okay.
And written by former Styx member Dennis DeYoung. Oh my God, Styx wrote this? That's crazy.
That sounds like a winner.
Yeah. Has that 15 real Dalmatians and using stilts to simulate the novel's original canine perspective. So the actors are on stilts, but the dogs, there's 15 live dogs in the musical. This seems like a nightmare to produce.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Is there video of this? I want to see this now.
I don't know if there's video. There's probably video. We can see it. But Styx, man. Wow. Huh.
Well, I guess he's not up to a whole lot. Or was not up to a whole lot.
Then. Yeah. So he decided to make 101 Dalmatians.
Why not?
A Broadway musical.
Sure. Did he ever go on Broadway?
I think it is.
I guess if it was a promotional stunt.
Yeah, I think it's a promotional stunt. I mean, it was sponsored by Purina.
Yeah.
This is crazy. I don't know. We gotta see this now.
I think so.
Oh man. All right. So yeah. So getting back to this movie, it's been a while since I've seen it actually, and I don't remember one thing that came striking. I think was the animation style. It was a lot cruder than what we've seen in the past.
The art style.
Yeah, the art style.
It is a lot more sketchy.
It's very sketchy.
Especially in sharp contrast to Sleeping Beauty.
In contrast to Sleeping Beauty, yeah. It's like they're two separate. You would have thought, if you were looking at the progression of Disney, that this movie came before Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, maybe. Because Sleeping Beauty was almost perfect in terms of the amount of attention to keeping.
The lines were so straight and so thin and exact, and it was just time consuming. This seemed like they'd spent less time on the lines and the painting of the cells, and focused on, I don't know what they would focus. I mean, they focused more on like the setting.
Yeah, no. Whereas Sleeping Beauty had very sharp line art and everything was meticulously painted. Here you had kind of lines with texture and a paint that was going outside the actual paint. And that was prevalent in everything, you know, the characters themselves as well as the backgrounds. And I liked it. I thought it was a cool effect. And you could even see, like, even within the dogs themselves, you would occasionally see remnants of their guidelines where there would just be, like, a center line around the middle of their
face,
forehead. Yeah, yeah. As they're moving around. It's not really like super squiggly like, you know, you would see on an animation that's trying to be kind of cute or something like that, but it definitely wasn't cleaned. It wasn't as sharp or as clean as,
well, unlike Sleeping Beauty where they did everything four times. It's like, yeah, they did this twice. Mm-hmm. Like they did the first and then they did it, and then if they didn't get all the lines, they didn't get all the lines.
Yeah. No, I liked it. I was super dug the look.
It was a great look, yeah. But it was just a super contrast than the last week when we saw this crazy cleaned up animation style.
Yeah, no, but this looked like, you know, someone was actually working on it. It looked a lot more gritty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that has to do with the fact that this story was also published in 1956 and went into it. I mean, it became a movie in 1961. Uh-huh. It was like the fastest turnaround we've seen in an actual. From book to movie, I think, in animation. Okay. So that's kind of crazy.
Sure.
So it seems like the book came out and they started animating it and then they made the movie.
Oh, yeah? So it was a pretty fast turnaround in terms of when the film came in production?
Yeah. It seems like it. Mm. Since the movie came out in 1961.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I dug the art. I think it gave this unique perspective. I don't think I realized as much as a kid. On the art itself.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they did that, though, for this type of movie? Do you think they were trying to go for a different style, or just...
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just a different... They just wanted to make a break from Sleeping Beauty. Because...
Yeah?
Well, I think part of it is... It sounds like that Sleeping Beauty was a failure in the box office. When it was released, they didn't make their money back from it.
Yeah, no. But this one was a $4 million budget, but made $215 million overall. I mean, that's including all the movies, all the re-releases. But
uh-huh.
I mean, it looks like this one actually made some money back.
But even from like watching the documentaries that were covering the process of creating the Sleeping Beauty, they knew that that was unsustainable. Like we mentioned last week, they knew that they were on the verge of bankrupting the company because that had become so expensive, and they needed to make a left turn and do something different. And so perhaps this was a cheaper way of creating films.
Well, apparently they were experimenting with Xerox photocopier to aid in animation.
Was that like a new development at the time?
Yeah.
There you go.
So they'd modified a Xerox camera to transfer drawings by animators directly to animation cells, eliminating the inking process. Which is why I think you see the lines still.
Oh.
It saved time and money. So that was crazy. Preserving spontaneity of the pencil element. So yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so basically it was Xerox.
That explains a lot.
They went... So like we... Like I was saying, right? Instead of redoing each pane four times, they did it twice, and they were done.
Wow, that's awesome. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So the reason that the line art wasn't very thick or very very defined is because no one actually went and refined the line art. It was literally straight transfer to paint.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, we were watching the behind the scenes for Sleeping Beauty, and they basically said they couldn't afford that anymore,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think Walt still wanted animation to be a forefront. So it seems like they went technology. They looked at technology as a way to help them achieve a cheaper process, but still maintain the quality of work. And I think they got a great movie out of it.
So they're saying here that by shutting down that hand painted inking process. The department and animation staff went from 500 people to less than 100.
They cut like 4/5 of the entire staff.
That's
a huge cut.
An enormous amount of people.
Wow. So machines replacing artists started.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh man, I don't know. Do you think they lose something by losing all of that detail when they did the hand painting of the cells? I mean, the effect is great for this movie, but in general, like, they just lost something that was replaced by technology.
I don't know. Do you?
I don't know. I mean, they don't hand do cells anymore, right? I mean, that's a lost art now.
Yeah. So I mean, they are digital inked, right? Someone is doing it at some point.
A little bit, right? But this is the turn from, I would put this as the pinnacle, I guess, in animation styles. So saying that we went from hand doing it to using, more technology to aid in the animation process. This is that turning point.
Sure. I suppose so. I mean, there are films, like, going forward, you know, the rest of the Disney movies don't look like this, with some exceptions.
Well, I mean, but they realize how to do it, right? I mean, this was the experimental movie on the Xerox one.
Sure.
So, but it is that effect where they realize that technology could do it a little bit faster while maintaining the quality that they were looking for. Uh-huh. So it seems to me this is... a turning point of more technology coming into animation, rather than before this was a very time-intensive, person-intensive craft, right?
Yeah.
I mean, totally. It still is a person-intensive, time-intensive craft, but you went from 500 to 100 people. That is incredible, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can actually make a movie in a reasonable amount of time. The turnaround would be a lot faster than, what was it, 9 years of development for Sleeping Beauty?
Uh-huh.
So... anything else interesting?
I don't know. That's fascinating to me. I might argue that they lose nothing by reducing.
Walt disliked it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he disliked the artistic look. He was losing the fantasy element of his animated films.
It was too raw, huh?
Yeah. So they lost the fantasy. I can see where he's coming from, though. I mean, right after Sleeping Beauty, you're going to this? Yeah. I mean, the contrast next to each other is where it's clear.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I can see how, you know, if you were expecting or you had become acclimated to the two, something that's very clean, very sharp, this could be a shock. But I like it. You know, I like seeing mistakes, I guess. I like seeing the thought process. And so in that regard, I think that's super cool. I like that it's actually the original animator's work rather than someone who is literally taking an animation drawing, taking an acetate cell, and then drawing over that, and then sending it off to paint.
Yeah.
By cutting off that middleman, it seems a little bit more fluid.
Yeah. So the director, Ken Anderson, mm-hmm. was very depressed about Walt's feelings for the movie. And not until like 1966 did he finally come back to the studio.
Yeah.
And Walt just said, he didn't even say anything, but just gave him this like wink, and he knew that all was forgiven about the animation, I think. but shortly after, Walt died. So it's crazy, right? I mean, he could have gone on forever thinking Walt hated him because of this animation.
Oh yeah. Yikes.
So there was also live action. They used live action models for this movie as well. I don't know if that was very evidently clear, but it seems like
for the humans, I could see it. It almost looked like it was a rotoscope, and I've said that before. But like the nuance to the emotion, the transfer of weight was amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, Disney insisted that all the scenes involving human characters should be shot first in live action, determined how they would work before the expensive business of animating was permitted.
It paid off. It absolutely paid off.
It was impressive. Like, just seeing the all the humans, even Cruella de Vil, just like the acting of that, it mm-hmm. was crazy.
Yeah.
And Anita, the Perdita's owner.
Yeah.
I think it's very evident in the scene in the park. Right? The interaction between the two humans.
Where Roger and Anita are being... Or meet coaxed. For the first time. Yeah.
Coaxed. And then they fall into the pond.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's... They shot that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a degree of nuance that you just can't get out of nothing.
So they didn't rotoscope this?
Yeah, that doesn't... I wouldn't say that they did, but...
No. They specifically didn't rotoscope it. Yeah. They studied every single image.
Yeah.
And recreated it.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's cool. That's the kind of attention to detail that only they were doing at the time.
Yeah. And how did you like the perspective? Back to dog perspective. I mean, this goes back to Lady and the Tramp, and you love that, so.
Yeah. Oh, I like it, of course. It's great.
Yeah. The book is crazy because it's all, you would love the book.
Oh, yeah?
Because it is that perspective. It is dog perspective.
Like the entire thing?
The entire thing is dog.
Awesome.
I think you should read it. It's great. It's a great read.
Yeah.
So I was looking more information here. They cast all the dog voices to be deeper than their human compatriots to give them more power.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They purposely cast a deeper voice for the dogs.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, okay. Because Pongo, who is the dog of Roger... And the main dog character.
The dog, the hero.
Yeah. Is, opens the film narrating.
My story begins in London. Not so very long ago. And yet so much has happened since then that it seems more like an eternity. At that time, I lived with my pet in a bachelor flat just off Regent's Park.
And they tried to kind of... It was a beautiful... To fool you into thinking that it is actually Roger talking.
Oh my god, it's Rod Taylor. Do you know Rod Taylor?
I do not.
He's the voice of Pongo, but he was also in The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh.
And he was in The Time Machine in 1960. So this guy's a crazy stage actor.
That's quite a get.
Yeah. So, very famous voice.
Yeah. So who wrote the book?
The book was written by what's his name? Dottie Smith.
Okay, is he famous for, is like this his life's work?
Sure,
or
her work.
Or her life's work?
Her other works include I Capture the Castle and Starlight Barking.
Starlight Barking.
They all seem like dog books.
Oh, interesting.
She did act a little bit. I don't know. She has a lot of plays and stuff like that from the in the 1930s. Some novels in the 1960s.
Uh-huh.
But this looks like her most famous work.
Okay. And you enjoyed it?
I loved it. I loved the book. The book was great, and it's totally different than the movie.
Oh, of course it is. Every book, every movie-based book we've seen has been totally different.
Yeah.
Without exception.
There's no exception.
Yeah.
Well, it's not totally different, right? So one of the big issues, and I'm okay with them changing the human characters, but the human characters in the book rarely get seen. There's a little bit of there.
Oh.
And Roger is actually just... the reason he has... He gets a free place to stay because he keeps saving the government from being bankrupt. He's this crazy
accountant?
He's a crazy whiz accountant that goes in and saves the country of England from being bankrupt, redoes all of their books, and then they say, oh, you don't have to pay taxes anymore. And then he does it again, and they say, oh, well, you don't have to pay taxes, and we're just going to pay you now for doing nothing.
Oh, that sounds so romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a good one. Mm-hmm. I like that. It's a different change of pace.
So do you like Accountant Roger or like marketing?
The musical musician Roger.
Musician Roger or video game designer Roger?
Video game designer.
The best.
Which one's video? Oh, because the live action? Is
yes.
Oh, man. I like the aloof accountant one where he just he's rich because he saves the country. I think that's the best storyline ever. Like she cared not a bit about what the human character's motivation was for anything, and decided to just make them just like, okay, well, yeah, they're not going to be able to really afford $101, but okay, so we're just going to put this in.
He's
so
just
going
to come into money.
Yeah, he's just going to be super rich, yeah. And it's over.
He would be eccentric enough,
yeah,
to want to take on that challenge.
Yeah,
okay, that makes sense.
I like that the best. Also, Cruella De Vil has a husband.
Really?
Yeah. And she is the last of her family, so to keep on the name, she forces him to take on her name. So it's Mr. De Vil.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's a Skinner. So and a furrier. So
that explains her kind of obsession, right?
Well, she loves furs. She has a lot of furs. That's her obsession with that. And Perdita is not actually the mother of the Dalmatians.
Perdita?
No.
Who is the mom?
Mrs. So it's Pongo and Mrs. Her name is Mrs. Pongo.
Oh, okay. So is it just change
no,
the name?
No. Perdita is in there.
Oh, really?
So they have 15 pups,
uh-huh,
right? And then the vet comes over and says, well, 15 pups are just going to like milk this woman dry, right? Basically. Uh-huh. So he said, if you can find another dog in the area that also recently had puppies or lost their puppies but still has milk, then you should bring her in and then do that, right? So... Anita is going up and down trying to find something. And she's trying to go to kennels and stuff like that. She finds no one. And she stumbles upon a dog in the street, and she's such a kind person, she takes her in. And it ends up being another Dalmatian who's really skinny but is giving milk.
Oh.
So she rushes home, and her name of this Dalmatian is Perdita. And the story goes that she actually had a litter of her own a couple months ago on the farm, and the farmer sold all the puppies away, and she was looking for them. And so those puppies were end up sold to Cruella DeVil.
And so the other puppies were they in that
yeah
house then?
They're in that house in the yeah end? Yeah, they're in the house.
And so
it becomes, so it's Pongo, Mrs. and Perdita, so it's like this weird like sister wife thing going on for a little while.
Okay.
And so that was an interesting twist. So I think they realized they really couldn't put another dog in. That would just confuse things a little bit.
Sure.
So they reduced the character count.
They wanted to create foils for Anita and Roger.
Yeah.
And having two Anitas would be weird as well.
Two Perditas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah. Two Anitas would be totally weird too.
Yeah.
And so another big change is there's not 99 dogs captured.
Oh yeah.
There's actually only 97 dogs captured.
Really? Pups.
And the three adult dogs, Perdita, Mrs. and Pongo, make 100. And they're like, oh, how do you get 101? Right? And so the last chapter is saying, oh yeah, Perdita's husband dog, right? So they basically, Perdita gets pregnant on a one-night fling.
Okay.
This is a crazy book. And so the dog gets taken, like they meet at this park and they have this fling and they're like, oh, my pets will take you in. We'll have fun. But that doesn't happen. And she never sees him again. And then they send out they're trying to adopt these, trying to see if anyone wants to claim any of these stolen puppies.
Uh-huh.
And end up the dog's like, oh, that's the Perdita, and they give up the adult dog. Prince is his name. So it's Perdita and Prince and Pongo and Mrs.
Wow.
Yep. So there's four adult dogs and 97 puppies is how that goes.
Okay. I guess that makes it more manageable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And for the puppies, they've combined two characters. Lucky is one of the main characters in the book, but they also had this girl character called Cadpig because she was really tiny.
Cadpig is a character in the cartoon.
Yes, right.
I'm now remembering more about this cartoon.
So Cadpig was another character.
Yeah.
So Lucky was actually more in charge, and he was more like the leader of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And Cadpig was a small one that was frail and be left behind and one obsessed with TV.
Oh.
TV does play a role in the book, but only for the puppies, not for the adults.
Okay.
I mean, even the human adults too. I mean, Anita and Roger don't like TV. They don't have TV.
How do the dogs watch TV then?
They only got into TV at the when
mansion?
They got captured.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's two nannies, not one, because both Roger and Anita came with a nanny.
Okay, yeah, sure. As they do.
Yeah, as they do. What else?
Are they dog-like, or are they... Do the dogs comment on the nannies?
No, the dogs do not comment on the nannies at all.
Oh, okay.
That's Nanny, a wonderful cook and housekeeper. She's such a kind, understanding soul. You know, at times she seems almost canine.
And the twilight barking and things like that, it's a lot more drawn out and it's a lot more built up because the dogs go, they stop at a lot more places. There's a lot more talking with other dogs. I really wish they did that. I can understand animation-wise and trying to get the pacing right. They didn't, but the pacing of trying to hide the dogs in barns and going to this place and that place.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems a little bit better in the book, but I can understand transferring the book stuff to the
not
movie.
Not hiding them. So you mean the trip both ways was just longer?
It was a total of a round trip of 4 days.
Oh, okay.
But here they made it like, I think, 2. So they definitely extremely shortened it.
Sure.
But I can understand why.
Sure.
Because in the book, Cruella DeVil and then the two baddies... And all the humans are minor characters. They're mentioned, but it's really the dogs. So I don't know. They did that really with Lady and the Tramp. I'm
surprised they didn't try to go that route also with 101 Dalmatians. I think it worked still.
Yeah.
And then also at the end of the book, the Dalmatians on their way back actually break into Cruella's house and destroy Oliver first.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it ends up being that they don't actually have that much money. They just pretended that they did. And so they didn't pay for anything. And because the husband, Mr. DeVille, was actually selling the furs and stuff like that, they didn't have enough money. So they actually went bankrupt and left and went to a warmer climate.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And Cruella DeVille always wears furs and she never doesn't. So it's like blazing hot in the summer when they meet her and she's wearing a fur. And then they invite her to her house and it's still like it's blazing hot because they have the furnace and everything on.
Yeah.
And she's cold. And then when they meet her in winter, she has two fur coats on. So she's like, she has no body fat. She can't create heat.
She's cold blooded.
She is cold blooded. Yeah. So she is the devil.
Yeah. All right. Wow. So Cruella DeVille has this. The story took place in London, right?
Yeah.
Cruella DeVille has a house in London.
Yes.
That was the implication. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the mansion that they escaped to is
Cruella DeVille's.
Her inheritance.
Oh, yeah.
From her
family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's basically spent it all at this point.
Yeah. They really don't have any money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All her jewels are fake. She has nothing. There's also a cat of Cruella DeVille's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's actually kind of funny. I mean, she only shows up like twice. But the first time she shows up, it's basically mentioned that she's a very expensive cat. I think a Persian cat.
Uh-huh.
So that's why Cruella keeps her around. But she hates the cat. And then the cat keeps getting with many scrappy cats around the neighborhood. And has litters.
Uh-huh.
She's like, oh, they're not purebreds. So she's like, kills them by drowning them.
The cat does?
No. Cruella DeVille kills like 44 litters of
cats. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But overall, I think the tone was there. I would have loved a little bit more. They changed up some of the dog characters just to, I think, get the pacing there.
Uh-huh.
But overall, it matches the story arc of the book.
So do they ever like explicitly state what Cruella's motivation is, like why she wants this coat?
Not in the movie, but in the books she says Dalmatian coat would be the best. It is one of the, it's unique. No one has this.
Uh-huh.
And so she wants it.
Oh, so that's the only reason.
That's the motivation.
Okay, so yeah, there isn't really much motivation.
That's the motivation.
Okay.
She likes furs.
Yeah.
That's the motivation.
And she wants what she can't have.
It's really a dog adventure tale. Yeah. It's Lord of the Rings for dogs.
Sure.
But yeah, I like the book. I think you should read it.
I think I will. I think I actually will pick it up. That sounds intriguing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very cool perspective from a dog's.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of give a little bit of interesting talking back and forth between the dogs, and there's an adventure and the colonel. I mean, there's a lot of strategy going on. So
cool.
Yeah, there's an interesting play between Perdita, Mrs. and Pongo.
I can imagine. Yeah, that sounds really intriguing.
So yeah, I recommend it. Check it out. And watch the movie at the same roughly at the same time, because you could definitely tell that the book, they took elements from the book to make a good movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they needed the pacing, right?
Sure. Right on.
Yeah. But for an iconic character of Cruella DeVille, what do you think? Like, as a villain. We were discussing great villains last week, and we're going to continue that discussion now with Cruella.
I like Cruella. I think she's a convincing villain.
Yeah.
I don't think she's in the same kind of, like, she is not a minion of hell. She's just kind of like this weird woman who really is crazy about
fashion. She's a crazy cat lady. She's
a crazy cat lady. There you go. And she's, but she has the resources. Like, she's an empowered crazy cat lady. She has the money. Well, or she had the money.
Yeah.
She has the resources, and she definitely has the time to do whatever she wants. And she knows what she wants, and she's going to go after it. So she's a real hero in my book.
She's the hero of 101 Dalmatians?
Yeah. Really, I think Cruella is just misunderstood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She wanted to show the world something new, and they rejected her. So she went after it in her own way. No one was going to get hurt. Just some dogs that nobody really cared about.
You mean 99 dogs?
Yeah, but you belong to this crazy accountant. He follows his money. Who cares about that guy?
Oh, okay.
And plus, the guy was ridiculing her. He was making a song about how terrible she was.
So?
How was she supposed to feel about that?
It's the most famous song on the radio now, too. How could she show her face ever again?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
She was wrong the whole way. Were the minions that she had, Jasper and what the other name?
Oh, yeah.
The one dude. Did they exist in the book as well?
Yes, yes, they are minions.
In the same kind of capacity?
Yep, they're idiots.
I like them.
Yep, they are, I was saying, they reminded me of the Home Alone guys.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because they're sitting at home, like, watching this TV, Cruella's braiding them, and they're like, no, no, woman, we're going to continue watching this fake game show that about other criminals. Like, no, a, like a yeah. What, 30, what, 60 questions or whatever. Whatever.
10 questions.
10 questions.
10 questions about what was the crime.
Yeah.
It's great.
And yeah, you know, when I saw that the first time, I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about. But seeing it now, it's like, yeah, that's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, in the book, they get put into jail. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, but they don't get to see TV. But they're like, oh, well, why do we have to? Our greatest thing is we want to talk to people that create the greatest crimes. And what odd crimes.
Nice.
And they said, oh, but now we can get on the TV show. Like, yeah. The whole purpose of their whole motivation was to create an odd crime so they can get on that TV show.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. I love that. Wow. Oh, man. That's cool.
Yeah.
I also like the other TV shows. I like the show with Thunderbolt.
Oh, yeah.
The
Thunderbolt, the dog.
The German Shepherd that was a hero in this. It was like a... Come on, Thunderbolt. What kind of show? It's like a Western show or something, right?
Yeah, I would say a Western.
That the dogs are all excited about.
Yeah.
After him, boy. That was fun. That was clever. And then they had product placement of K9 Crunchies.
Oh, it was actually a real show. Thunderbolt, the Wonder Colt.
Real? Wait, Colt? What?
I don't know. Oh, horse? Maybe. I don't, maybe it's a whole horse. Let me see. There's a Disney wiki. It's coming up.
Okay.
Thunderbolt is a character from Hunt. He is voiced by Barry Bostwick in the spinoff.
Wait, does it... What?
Oh, in the sequel.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the pups get to meet their hero. Does it turn out to be a sham or something?
I don't know.
I could write this movie.
Thunderbolt's Adventure Hour, I guess. I don't know where this is coming from. I think that would be a great show. I want to see that show, Thunderbolt. Is it like Lassie, basically? It's in the vein of Lassie.
I guess so.
I think it's in the vein of Lassie, I guess. Yeah, that's all I can see. So, yeah. Thunderbolt was great. The ad for the dog biscuits, that was great.
K9 Crunchies.
Yeah, K9 Crunchies.
Can't be beat.
Can't be beat. I love the meta of this. It's like you're watching a movie, then we're watching TV.
Yeah, yeah, we're watching just, dogs watch TV. That's fantastic.
That was the entire movie almost.
Yeah. I agree. That was like, wait a minute, what am I doing with my life? How did we come to this point?
But it is a change of pace. I mean, look, you're seeing this book about people watching TV, right? And and I think TV is becoming more mainstream at this point. 1960s, everyone's more likely to have TVs in their home.
Yeah, and you know, even it added a kind of an element of authenticity to it, I think.
Oh no, I think it totally did, and I think it kind of also shows the pace of where you're coming from. Most of these movies were all before is your settings are way back before. I think the closest one was like 1920s, maybe 1930s.
Uh-huh.
But time frame wise, right? And this one is more set like, oh, this could happen right now, right? This is happening today, just in London and not in America.
Mm.
So
sure, yeah, yeah.
Well, most of the other ones were a little bit further back. There wasn't TV. There wasn't things like that.
I wonder if maybe the idea of that song was maybe that was something that Roger would have written.
Which one? Canine Countries?
Yeah, that yeah. jingle?
Yeah, I think he would have totally written that.
Yeah, that sounds like maybe that's why they played the like the full thing is because at some point they would have explained that, yeah.
He was responsible. You think it was actually like a build up and they cut the scene?
Maybe, possibly. Yeah. I'm totally speculating.
I could see that. Or yeah. they came up with a song thinking, oh, well, we don't have a song yet. And so that would have been the initial song that they would have sung.
Yeah, maybe.
And
yeah.
then they came up, oh, we got Canine Crunch. We got Cruella de Vil. Cruella de Vil.
Oh.
So something interesting while we were watching this movie, we saw many, many characters we've seen before.
Yeah, there were some weird cameos. Yeah. I thought, okay, when we saw the Scottish Terrier from Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, well, that's uncanny. That looks exactly like the Scottish Terrier. And he's painted the same. It's just, like, darker because it's night. This is during the scene. What did they call it? The Twilight Howl? The Twilight Bark or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're going from dog to dog and communicating this signal that
yeah.
the puppies are gone. And yeah, one of the jump cuts is to that Scottish Terrier barking up a drainage whatever.
Yeah, drainage pipe.
Yeah. And then immediately after that, then they go to, they like pan across a pet shop and you see who? We see the English Bulldog.
Yeah.
We see Peg.
Yeah.
There's at least one other character. And yeah, they're, you know, straight up in, transported to London somehow.
Yeah.
I guess they're doing okay for themselves.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking. But yeah, that was a very unexpected and clever nod to one of their own films that I never caught before.
Yeah, no, and then I
was very blatant in retrospect.
Actually, I don't think we would have caught it unless you've seen those movies close to proximity.
That, yeah, probably.
Because you'd be like, oh, that's just another dog.
Right? Yeah.
Because you could be like, oh, it's a bulldog.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
Yeah, when I saw the first one, I'm like, wait a minute, that's kind of lazy. But then, when they kept coming, I'm like, okay, let's see what they're doing.
They're so meta about
yeah.
What also was fun, though, was watching the opening sequence where Pongo's basically like, I got to get this Roger guy hooked up because he's going to be bachelor his entire life, right? And he's, yeah. like, watching women, yeah. and you basically see, like, these women and their dogs that look exactly the same.
Yeah.
It is awesome.
There's the dog that's dressed like this kind of, like, French...
Poodle,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, and then the yeah, she's like, way too rich, uh-huh. not enough. And then there's this uptight woman with a small dog.
Yeah.
There's this, like, hippie chick kind of thing, like, artist chick.
Yeah, totally. that was pretty clever.
Yeah.
Pretty clever way of disseminating his thought process and the dog's thought process in finding a suitable match for Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Very, very clever.
Yeah, so I guess if you get a dog, you'll start looking like it, or the dog will start looking like you.
Yeah.
So do you look like your dog, Dragaroo?
Sure.
Do you dress alike?
Occasionally, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. What do you dress up as?
Well, occasionally I will dress in a wig and wear shades, just like her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's just a thing we do.
Wow, you guys are really
good. You would understand.
It's cosplay, isn't it? It's all this cosplay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're both really into it.
You're really into cosplay?
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of dog is she?
She's a mutt. I think she's a Dane Border Collie mix.
Okay.
Allegedly.
There you go.
Her vet thought she was a Dalmatian mix, but nobody knows for sure.
Oh, so she could be 101 Dalmatian.
She could be, yeah.
Oh. So she could be Perdita.
Perdita or Missy?
Mrs. Missus.
You never know.
You never know with these ones.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember much from the live action one?
Yes.
Yeah? I remember that I forgot that he was a video game designer.
So I actually remember the Disney Interactive computer game of this movie much better than I remember the actual film, which is weird.
What is this, on a PC or Mac?
Yeah. So I played it on the Mac, and I think I had it because my sister had it on the Mac, and so obviously I played the heck out of it. And it's, you know, it's during the age when the point-and-click, like, interactive storybooks was a huge deal. And so the fun part of that stuff is finding the Easter eggs. And it's, you know, stupid. It's like the Humongous Games kind of stuff. You know, like Putt-Putt the Fish and...
Oh, yeah.
Putt-Putt's a car. But, yeah. Freddy the Fish. Putt-Putt. And,
I want to see Putt-Putt the Fish now.
Yeah. Maybe sometime in the future. But, yeah, that was... It was strange that was the first thing. That was the most vivid memory of this in my head. But for sure, yeah, the live action films with Gwyneth Paltrow, come to mind far easier than this one. I must have seen there were like three of those, right?
Three.
Yeah, I think so. I think that had a couple of sequels.
I think there was one 101 Dalmatians. Oh, there's 102 Dalmatians.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You think there's 103 Dalmatians?
There might have been. I don't know if I've seen it, but...
I don't remember. I remember one. I don't remember anything past that.
No, I saw the second one.
What?
Yeah.
Why did you see it?
I don't know. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Yeah, there was 102 Dalmatians.
Really? Who was in it? Same people?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they had Gwyneth.
Glenn Close was in there. Wow.
Oh, was it Glenn Close?
She's the villain, yeah.
That's right.
Jeff Daniels is Roger? I forgot Jeff Daniels was Roger. That's right. He is now in a newsroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dumb and Dumber, right? Fame?
Really?
Yeah. He was with Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber.
Julie Richardson.
Who is a Julie Richardson? Oh, Julie Richardson was in Tutors and everything. This was actually quite a famous class.
Huh. The only thing I really remember about 101 Dalmatians is, even as a kid, I thought the scene where Roger is a video game designer, like we established, and there's a kid who's testing one of his games, the very beginning, like in this boardroom, this snotty sounding kid, and he... It was like I found it to be incredibly unbelievable and ridiculous. I thought that was funny.
Oh, Hugh Laurie is Jasper in that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you got to start somewhere.
Well, I think he started somewhere before that. Do you know Blackadder?
I do not know Blackadder.
Oh, you got to watch Blackadder. Hugh Laurie and Blackadder and Rowan Atkinson.
Uh-huh.
Not Atkinson. What is it? What is his name?
Rowan Atkinson.
Is it? It is Rowan Atkinson. Mr. Bean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you have to watch that. I gotta say, Blackadder, hilarious.
Okay.
Hilarious. Yeah. That's where Hugh Laurie perfects the idiot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a total idiot.
I'll look it up.
It's on...
Netflix?
Actually, Amazon Prime.
Amazon, okay.
Yeah, they have all of them. So, streaming.
Very well. I should give it a shot.
Yeah, it's actually takes, it's the same kind of character put in different eras of time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There's Christmas specials, crazy amounts of stuff, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, Blackadder, very good. Wow. That's good. Oh, continue, I cut you off with this boardroom person.
Oh, no, I've said what I need to say about that movie. How did you like it?
I don't really remember watching it on TV. Actually, I don't remember seeing it in theaters.
I can't remember. I don't know if I actually went to the theater to see it, but
I don't remember. I remember seeing it on TV, like on Disney's Wonderful World of Disney.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There was 102 Dalmatians.
Oh yeah.
2000 live action film. Glenn Close was in it again.
Well, of course.
What?
You can't get a new Cruella De Vil.
But they got the rest of the new class. The rest of the cast is new.
Oh. Oh, I guess so.
Oh, this is a totally different storyline, I guess.
When Cruella DeVil is released from prison, the changed woman?
Yeah. Attempt to steal puppies from her grandest...
No. This sounds pretty plausible. Devoted to dogs and good causes, she is delighted that Chloe, her parole officer, has a Dalmatian family and connections with the dog charity. But the sound of Big Ben can reverse the treatment, so it is only a matter of time before Mrs. DeVil is back to her incredibly ghastly ways, using her newfound connections with Chloe and friends. Yeah, it sounds...
Why would she go to some place where Big Ben can reverse this?
It's just how spells work. This is a period of, magic and witchcraft. You know, 2000.
I didn't know 2000 was magic and witchcraft.
Believe it or not.
Wow. I totally missed that.
Eric Idle was in this.
What?
No, he wasn't. He was just a voice in it. But he was technically in it.
I got to say, the first live action made $320 million. So, pretty good.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah. Oh, Cruella DeVil.
I thought Glenn Close was okay.
I think she was a good Cruella DeVil.
Gwyneth Paltrow, as yeah. I said I was several like, times. Gwyneth
Paltrow is not...
She probably could be a good Cruella DeVil. I don't know.
Why would you say that? She's too pretty for that. Oh.
All right. Well, that's such a two Dalmatians.
Don't watch it. Don't watch it. Don't watch it.
I don't know.
Watch this movie, though. Watch this movie.
All right.
Anything else? Anything looking forward to? What's the next movie that we're watching? You're like, I have no idea.
It beats me.
Okay.
Were there any other movies? Package film, right?
Yeah, we're going back to package film.
Excellent.
Which one do you want to go to?
Three Caballeros. Part two.
We should cosplay as the Three Caballeros.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. How do we do that?
What do you mean, how do we do that?
We're going to wear bird costumes?
Yeah, totally. Oh, no. Sword in the Stone is next.
Oh, okay.
Totally.
Oh, cool. I've seen that recently.
What?
Yeah.
How did you see that recently?
I think it was on Netflix, actually.
Oh.
It might still be there.
I have actually never seen that movie full.
Really?
No, I have never seen that movie full either.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive. I've only
because
seen
you could have seen the whole movie and not think you've seen the whole movie.
What?
Yeah, it's one of those kinds of movies.
No, because I always confuse. I've always seen parts of it and confused it with parts of the Black Cauldron. Like I've always interchanged two of those.
Oh, okay. Hmm. All right, I've seen the Black Cauldron once and didn't think much of it.
I've only seen parts of the Black Cauldron.
Mm.
But interesting fact about the Black Cauldron is yes. We had, in my lab in college...
You had a Black Cauldron?
No, we had the original
the original Black Cauldron.
The original video game for Black Cauldron released that year.
What?
There was a video game for the Black Cauldron.
That was released in your college that
no,
year?
No.
What? You lost me.
It was released, and we had the box with the original Black Cauldron with all the rules and everything, and you could play it. There was a box with the cartridge.
Oh.
The floppy disks, and you can put them in.
I see.
Yeah.
Did you play it?
We didn't have a computer that could play it.
Oh, it's too sophisticated.
Yes. No, we weren't that sophisticated, but we were sophisticated.
You were still using punch cards. Back in your day, right?
Punch cards. Yeah. Yeah, I program on punch cards to this day, man.
Why would you use anything else?
Hey, when the computer goes down, I have my punch cards.
Mm-hmm.
Still exist.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. Super easy
that's
to make.
never mind.
That what?
Nothing. Let's go on.
100 lines of code.
Yeah.
Is 10,000 punch cards or something. Maybe.
But, you know, at the end of the day, you felt like you really...
I worked out my muscles.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, totally. Punch.
That sounds really satisfying
yeah.
to me.
And then you can burn them all when you're done.
Yeah.
And no one will know your code.
I know. Gone. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
I wish what I did had, like, some physical kind of manifestation. I guess...
You don't. That's okay.
I mean, if you abstract it a crazy amount.
No.
I do? But not really. I could print out stuff, right?
You can always
and then I can stuff. Burn it.
Then you can burn it. You can print out stuff and then burn it.
I should just start handwriting my code. Like in long form. With a quill and did you get your pen yet?
No, it doesn't even finish yet.
Oh, that's too bad.
No, the campaign goes on until the end of this month. And then it gets shipped and actually the guy said he's already ordered the first batch and anyone that ordered early is gonna get their pen way before everyone else.
Nice.
Like he's like, I don't even have to have this thing close.
Uh-huh.
I'm just gonna start shipping pens. So maybe I'll get my two pens soon.
So how much do you expect that pen will improve your writing?
None whatsoever. I think it's a desk piece.
Wait, then what's the point? Are you going to use it?
Well, I will use it.
Okay.
Yeah. But part of it's a desk piece.
Yeah.
Right. I like I think it's a good pen, I think, in general.
Yeah.
But I won't use it other than maybe I'll use it to ink drawings that we make for a cartoon.
No, just Xerox stuff.
I don't know. Xerox, man. Making the world go round.
Yeah.
If we had no Xerox, we'd have no Windows.
Yeah, sure.
No, we wouldn't have Windows. We wouldn't even have a mouse.
Yeah, or doors.
No, I mean an actual mouse.
Yeah.
A physical mouse. The
the ones that squeak?
Yeah. Yeah, the ones that make dresses for Cinderella. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know the ones.
Okay.
Gus.
Gus.
Gus Gus.
They gotta bring Gus Gus back.
Yeah, they do.
Like, that should be a movie, Gus Gus.
Yeah.
All right. This is getting rambling and side scrolling.
I think Rolly was like the manifestation of Gus Gus.
I'm hungry, Mother. I'm hungry. Now, Rolly, you've just had your dinner.
But I am just the same. I'm so hungry I could eat a whole elephant.
Rolly was I'm hungry.
Yeah.
I'm hungry.
I'm hungry, Mother. I really am.
Rolly was the best. What were the other pups' names that were actually in the film? Because they didn't really, very few of them actually had any screen time. It wasn't really about them.
No, that's
as individual characters, anyway.
Well, I mean, the book has three characters. They talk about Lucky. They talk about
Patch.
No, they mention Patch. The Lucky is the main character.
Uh huh.
Lucky, Pongo, Mrs., Cadpig, and Rolly is mentioned as the comic relief.
Okay. Yeah, and here they name more than, well, they don't name the same ones, but they name more pups, peas.
Pupsies.
Working on it, puppies. There's Lucky, there's Rolly, there's Patch, there's...
Princess? I don't know.
There are other dogs, puppies. But, I mean, their distinguishing characteristics seem to be far and few between.
All the puppies look the same.
Rolly is...
fat
is chubby.
Why are you being nice?
Because it's a child. You don't call a kid fat.
Why not?
Because that's demeaning.
Why?
Because
they were too nice. I think we should call kids fat if they're fat.
Don't you know fat kids who grew up to be not fat?
Who?
I guess not.
I've known fat kids to grow up to be fatter kids, fatter adults.
Okay, well. Okay. So, yeah, that's Rolly. And then, so Lucky is the one that's addicted to television.
Yeah.
But otherwise, seems relatively stoic. He says very little. Yeah. He likes TV, and then he complains when he's about to be frozen to death. Oh, Lucky's the one who died, right? In the beginning. Or was no, on the brink of death. Was that someone else?
They didn't mention who it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. See, that would have been smart if I'd written this book.
Your book or movie?
Yes.
The book, they mentioned it because that's
so
Catpig.
So is there... Oh, that's Catpig in the book.
Yeah.
Oh, is Catpig like a gimp?
No, Catpig's the smallest of all of them.
Okay, so yeah. she came no, through
so
that without...
No, so she can't traverse the entire... she's too small. She gets tired too easily.
Uh-huh.
So they, the colonel is actually a dog.
The colonel's awesome.
The colonel is awesome.
Yes, Dot, Spot, Spotted Puddings, Poodles. No, Puddles. Puddles, sir? 15 spotted puddles stolen. Oh, balderdash.
So the colonel and Lucky are best friends.
Oh, really? Because the
colonel's like, okay, well, now you're lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now you're your lieutenant something else. You're now, I am commander and you are this thing. Like, he's just outranking. He promotes Lucky and then promotes himself. He's just like awesome. Constant promotion.
That's great.
And so he has there's an owner. His owner's like 2 years old or something. And
wait.
His pet is 2 years old.
Who?
The colonel.
The colonel's pet.
Yeah.
The cat.
No.
What pet does the colonel have?
Humans. Pets are humans.
Right? Oh, the colonel's owner is two?
Yeah, 2 years old.
Oh. Okay.
And so because they're having trouble walking this cat pit can't traverse, they actually end up he's like, okay, we're going to take my owner's wheelbarrow thing.
Uh-huh.
And they have two other puppies pull Cat Pig the entire way around. So she's just lying on hay in this thing and going the entire journey for 2 days.
Wow, nice. Yeah.
So it's definitely different. So you have to read the book. It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I think I will.
It's an easy read. Takes about, I don't know, a day, day and a half.
Not if you're me.
It's like 200 pages.
Yeah. I've been sitting on books forever.
I have it too. I have the Game of Thrones to read.
Oh, really?
I'm still going through that.
What happened?
I'm reading these other books, so they're just taking more time, right?
Oh.
So, we shall see. All right. Well, I think a great movie.
Yeah, it's just
different animation style.
Yeah. So. Polarizing, apparently, if you're Walt Disney.
Yeah. Well, I think it's polarizing to us, too. I mean, after seeing Sleeping Beauty and then going to this, it's totally different.
I guess maybe it is more of a novelty from my perspective, because you're used to seeing stuff that's like super slick and polished. So seeing stuff that's kind of not completely done is kind of novel. It's unique.
It is a unique animation style that I find more relevant to TV than I do for movies.
Perhaps. I think even TV looks better than that most of the time. I mean, when you're talking about like cleaned up, yeah, work. Like most TV is significantly sharper. But I can see what you're saying for sure. Yeah, if you're talking about like an early like low budget kids television show, Canadian kids television show. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, no offense to Canada.
No.
Or Canada.
No offense to our Mounties.
Mounties. All right. Good night,
Mounties. We can't end like that. That was a weird note to end on.
Well, we started really weird, so I thought we'd just end weird. How would you like to end? I'll let you end this one.
Well, no. We have to talk about the film, right?
We did talk about the film.
All right, well, we have to talk about the next film.
The next film is A Black Cauldron.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's a Black Cauldron?
No, sorry. It's a... I told you, I already screwed it up. No, Sword in the Stone.
Sword in the Stone, yeah.
King Arthur, basically.
What do you remember of Sword in the Stone?
It's King Arthur. I remember the opening scene.
Okay.
That's about
it. But you haven't seen the whole thing?
No, I've really? Never seen the whole thing.
I like this movie. I'm looking forward to it, but... It's an odd one.
What do you mean it's an odd one? Well, we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, we will. I can't wait. I look forward to it.
So this will be the Dragaroo podcast next week, because I will have nothing to say intelligent.
Excellent. I mean, that can't be true. But we'll see. So 101 Dalmatians, it's a good film. Go see it, especially if you like dog movies. This is the second Disney dog movie we've seen.
Yeah.
Is there any others?
There's outside cats. There's a cat movie.
Yeah, we're going to see the rest of Cats.
We're going to see the Oliver and Company.
Oh, yeah. Oliver and Company.
There's some dogs in
that's
that.
That's a dog and cat movie.
Yep.
Mostly dogs. Oliver's the odd man out.
Yeah. I think overall there's not that many dog movies.
Yeah, we're running out. And then Bolt.
Bolt, yeah.
Yeah.
Bolt is like Lucky going to go find his hero. No, it's not.
Bolt is like The Truman Show.
I don't want to be The Truman Show, but sure.
I like The Truman Show.
Okay.
Just so you know, it's a good movie. I don't care what anyone says.
It's a decent movie. I just haven't seen it in a long time.
I enjoyed the concept. I thought execution was pretty good.
Oh, great. There's a book for this.
The Truman Show? Movie.
No, The Sword and the Stone.
Oh, okay. We'll get on it. There's
it's
a book.
Tetralogy.
A trilogy?
A tetralogy. Not a trilogy. A tetralogy. So it's four? Yeah.
I've never heard that term before.
The Once and Future King.
I think you're making that up.
No, it's right here. It says on Wikipedia.
Tetralogy.
Oh, there's a... Okay.
I'm going to need some reference.
Huh?
I'm going to need some citation.
It says Wikipedia. That's my citation. Wikipedia.
You can't... Dude, you can't cite Wikipedia.
Yeah, you can.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
Nobody allows that.
Yeah, I just did.
I thought you're a scientist. What are you talking about?
I'm a scientist. We have Wikipedia. We call something called Gene Wiki.
Uh-huh.
And we cite Gene Wiki all the time.
Uh-huh.
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 I say wikis all the time.
I could go to Gene Wiki, couldn't I?
Yes.
And I could edit it.
No, you couldn't.
And it would be completely wrong.
You don't know anything about genes.
Exactly. That's why it would be messed up.
Well, you couldn't edit it.
Oh. Why not?
Because you don't have an account on Gene Wiki.
Well, I'll go make one.
Oh, you have to pass a test.
Okay.
What's a gene?
It's a thing that determines something.
Oh, wow. You failed.
All right. Well, let me take it again.
Okay. What is it? What's gene?
It's not something that defines something. Something else.
You're close.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Good.
I'll give you a read-only access.
Okay, well, got to start somewhere.
I got four books to read by next week, so I better end this podcast.
Yeah, so we got Game of Thrones. We have Sword and Stone. And what are the other two?
I'm reading the romantic novel.
The romantic novel.
Yeah.
I've heard good things about that one.
It's a werewolf vampire romantic thing.
Oh.
It's a steampunkish romance novel.
I see.
It's actually decent. I've read the first one. It's a tetralogy as well. It's four books.
I still don't think that's a word. What's the fourth book in your tetralogy of books you're reading simultaneously?
I actually have to read papers for work.
So
I have 16 papers I need to read by next week. So,
what?
Yep.
Holy cow.
Yeah. We're publishing some good papers. So,
cool.
That I'm on. My name is on some of them. So I should actually read them.
Nice. So look for papers of Catatonic Cat on them.
They won't actually have Catatonic Cat on them. Sorry.
Oh, no. Maybe you can work that in somehow. Maybe you can work in the podcast somehow.
All my papers?
Yeah.
I have some papers on dogs.
Oh, they exist. There you go.
Yep, I have dog genetic papers.
Excellent.
We talk about different breeds and how to identify them at crime scenes.
Crime scenes?
Crime scenes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we take I had this paper where we just took I helped to analyze the data, but we basically said any hair samples left at a crime scene, we could determine what kind of breed the it came from.
Uh-huh.
So you can reduce what kind of breeds you were looking for. And then we could identify any given breed.
Oh.
Yeah. So crime scenes. I can identify what dogs were at crime scenes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that could be useful if you're looking for 101 Dalmatians.
Yes. I could find a Dalmatian. Yes.
Yes.
I could actually probably tell you which Dalmatian it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I probably could do paternity tests on all those Dalmatians to tell you which...
I don't know if we want that. No. Based on what we've heard about this book? No. It's anybody's guess.
Yeah.
That was one of the weird things at the end of the movie when Pongo and Anita... No, Perdita. Who is the dog version of
Perdita?
Anita? Perdita, yeah. Pongo... No, you know when Pongo and Anita come back with...
Perdita. Not Anita. Pups. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know what version of the story you saw, but
wow, I didn't know a human and a dog got together.
And Roger looks at Pongo. He's like, "Hey, good job, man."
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. he's a little bit way too cool with that.
You know, he's like, "Hey, man. You did a good job, man. You sowed some good seeds out there."
But, yeah, that's what happens when you're a eccentric accountant. And with that, this should wrap up. See you guys by the Clamp Jagger. That's Catatonic Cat. Good night.
Good night.
I can't stop it now.
What?
The show must go on.
The show must go on? So, to wet all this
You can be a champion too if you eat canine crunchies.
Now remember, friends, just send five...
All right, Cookie, little rascal. Let's go.
I'm hungry, Mother. I really am.